Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. This is the tailgate party for Saul Canelo Alvarez versus James Mandingo Kirtland. With me, sitting in the seat of Gabriel Montoya, is Lenny the Fight Smith, and the scorekeeper for tonight is going to be Brian Fogg. So I got two of the writers for Leaving the Ring, two of the guys that actually go out there and work the beat and are not afraid to put down what their true thoughts are on paper are here live with me on the show. Welcome to the show, guys. Thanks for coming on.
Glad to be on, dude.
They're like Siamese twins, man. They got to kind of look at each other before they speak. They're just like learning it out. So one at a time. Lenny, welcome to the show, man.
Glad to be on, dude. Glad to be on, Dave.
Brian, thanks for coming on, brother.
Hey, thanks, brother.
All right, fight fans, you want to call in? Certainly can. 347-215-7598. Let's talk boxing here. The dud of the century, Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather. Listen, come on, man. I mean, how many times do we got to beat this drum here? We all kept saying this for 5 years. This was not going to be an exciting fight. Everybody out there making the excuses for Manny Pacquiao, talking about where was the footwork, where was this, where was that. There was never any footwork, man. And also for people out there going, well, there's no more questioning of whether or not Floyd Mayweather is a TBE. Are you guys serious? First off, let me throw my little rant here really quick. Manny Pacquiao was a great fighter as a featherweight, not as a welterweight, people. Come on. Did we forget here that Manny Pacquiao used to drain fighters? Manny Pacquiao used to fight out of their prime fighters, over-the-hill fighters? That Floyd Mayweather is one of the biggest cherry pickers in history, and so is Manny Pacquiao. We had two guys here that really pick and chose when their opponent was ripe enough to go after. So there was nothing great between the both of them. These guys were just really the more, I would say, more media embraced than any other fighter out there. So that's why it was a big deal. Not for really hardcore boxing. Us hardcore boxing fans, Lenny, just wanted this fight to get done and over with so that, one, casual fight fans could stop asking. Two, all these so-called reporters and websites that popped up for boxing just finally just disappeared, which I'm anticipating for about another month and a half because of the replay on HBO. You know they're still out there to kind of soak up more of the hits that they've been getting from the casual fans out there. So I'm not getting this. Am I wrong about this here, Lenny? Am I wrong to say this is the dud of the century? And if this was supposed to be expected, wasn't supposed to be a very back-and-forth war. This was just going to be a boxing clinic from either one of the guys, and obviously it was going to be Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, I definitely think it was a dud to everybody who just kind of became a boxing fan in the last couple months and expected it to be an amazing fight. I think big-time boxing fans pretty much called it. I think everybody that knows the sport and knows these two fighters expected this. I mean, this was exactly the fight that you guys have been talking about, exactly the fight that I predicted. I think I said it was going to be about 8-4 Floyd in a tactical fight. Manny's defense was a little bit better than I thought it was going to be, surprisingly, but his offense was worse than I thought it was going to be. But overall, it wasn't a terrible, terrible fight objectively, but
right,
because it was such a big deal. It was never going to live up to expectations. It was what it was. I'm glad it's over. I really, really hope we don't have to hear about any rematch talk for the next year. And I hope we can just move on.
I don't want to hear anything about this. These two, honestly, I wanted it finally to be done and over with. Let it go. Now we move on. We can concentrate on some upcomers. We can concentrate on some real fights that happen out there. You know, when I came across casual fans and they were like, okay, without getting too technical, what do you think? And I would say, listen, the not the average guy that just occasionally falls into watching the sport, but somebody that watches as avidly as we do, we kind of knew the layout, how it was going to be. Floyd was not going to be that engaging. He was going to have spurts, but not that much. He was going to take advantage of the fact that Manny doesn't have great. I don't know where everybody comes up with this. He has the greatest footwork in the world. Maybe he did look like he did because he fought slower guys like Margarito, you know, but really, it wasn't ever really there. He had fast hands, and he threw a lot of combinations. What nullified that output was Floyd's straight right, was Floyd's jab. If you watch when Miguel Cotto stepped in for 4 to 5 rounds, Cotto was able to keep Manny Pacquiao at bay. You know, so that already being said, don't want to hear about a rematch, don't want to see that happen. I'd like to see it just all go away and we can move on forward. Let's patch in some fight fans really quick before we give our breakdown of the Canelo and Curlin fight, man. I haven't given my pick, and I'm not sure you guys have given out your pick yet, but we'll do that right now. Let's patch in some fight fans here really quick. Let's go with let's go with 916. You're on live on the air. What's on your mind, brother? 916, you out there?
Oh, my
okay.
God.
Hold on. 916, you out there? Hello,
David,
I heard you right
Scott.
Hey, Stephanie, how you doing?
I didn't mean for you to pick me up. I'm here with my dad. We just wanted to tune in and hear what you had to say.
Okay, well, I'll put you back on hold, okay? Thanks for tuning in. Let's go with area code. Area code 931, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, gentlemen? It's Eduardo from Florida now. Jesus Christ, I moved too long.
Hey, Florida,
what's going
bro.
On,
soaking up all the sun rays and everything. Corona's on the beach.
Man.
Checking out
Pacifico,
the beach.
Pacifico, Pacifico. Pacifico, baby.
Orale. What's up, brother? How you doing, man? What's on your mind?
Yeah, man, I'm just kind of curious. I think I'm going crazy, but I think this is like what? The beginning of the end for Canelo, to be honest. I think after Miguel leaves, he's not a real middleweight anyways, but neither is Canelo size-wise. He's only 5'9 and 7-inch reach. He is smaller than every man in middleweight. And let's get something straight. I respect Canelo, man. He's good marketing, but, man, he fought all the tough guys, man. Everybody, you don't have to like him, but you have to respect him. But I don't see, you know, with his molasses feet, he's very short. I don't see him fighting real big men in middleweight. I don't see much from him there.
Well, you know, here's the thing with Canelo, man. You're absolutely right. The way he was marketed was they were genius about it. Golden Boy actually did a phenomenal job. They signed him when he really had a Rolling Thunder in Mexico because they only have 2 to 3 channels, major channels that he would appear on. So he had the marketability already there in put. Now it's all about doing the work as a matchmaker. And let's remember this. When Golden Boy was in bed with Schaefer, Schaefer brought along the threesome, which is Al Haymon. Al Haymon, what I was told by some folks in Golden Boy, was that they weren't really allowed to do the matchmaking. Everything that they set up had to go through Haymon, and Haymon made the final say if these fights were going to happen. Now, more or less, you're starting to see much better fights. They try to make a great, phenomenal fight between Frankie Gomez and Gilberto Soto, but Gomez got the recipe of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Couldn't make weight. Kid struggled he's been struggling for some time to make weight. But with Canelo, you're absolutely right. They got to really sit there, man. They really have to have a conference call among all of each with everybody that's involved in Go Boy and really lay out the map for another 2 years of where do they keep this kid at. Because at 160, he's going to definitely have problems with the much bigger men that swim in that pond. What do you think, Lenny?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When Canelo fought Lara, I had a conversation. My dad's a big boxing fan. My dad knows the sport really well. And he had this radical – no, that was actually when he fought Trout. My dad's like, Canelo should be fighting at welterweight. Because I made the argument that Canelo needs to move up. He's too big. And my dad went the other way completely. Now that I've seen him struggle with Lara and arguably lose to Lara, and now that he's in the ring with bigger guys, it kind of makes sense. He was beating up these guys because he was on fight night, he was so much bigger than the guy he was going up against, whether it was Ricky Hatton's brother or Miguel Cotto's brother, those types of guys. He was just mopping the floor with them,
because he was coming in 10 pounds heavier, 15 pounds heavier. It was the kind of the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. recipe, except Canelo could actually make weight.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Agreed. Absolutely. Eduardo, anything else on your mind, brother, before we let you go?
Yeah, I can't wait. Hopefully I have Canelo on the card, so I don't think he's going to be able to stop or TKO Kirkland, but I hope he wins so I can watch I'll be attending wherever the fight at. I want to see Miguel Cotto get buried and killed that night. I'll be there.
There you go, man. You're on record. And welcome from Florida, man. Thank you, brother.
All right, Papa. Be easy.
All right, man. Anyways, we're passing some fight fans right now really quick here. Give us a few minutes. Omar Figueroa and Ricky Burns. This was earlier today at 1 p.m. On the PBC, the PBC Con Network. I call it the PBC Con Network, man, because I don't know, man. Listen, anything that involves boxing, I support. Whether it's good or bad, I have to sit and kind of watch it. But it's really hard to stay positive when you know that their agenda has nothing to do with us fight fans. That's the hardest thing to do, is to sit there and try to take pride on something that's being tarnished by a couple other guys that don't understand our sport. So, being that said, Omar Figueroa, it's not really entirely his fault, because you have to blame all the guys that are in the stable of Al Haymon, who are basically puppets. They don't have a mind. They're not allowed to use their mind when it comes to saying what's going to happen next in their career or what they should do next. They're really there just to fight. It's almost like the union, you know what I mean? When you're signed out, I know you guys know what I'm talking about. When you're in the union, they call you in, they say, hey, we got a job for you. All your job is to do is to show up. You're a hand. And that's pretty much what we're seeing here with the PBC fighters. They're just a hand. They're not there to shed an opinion. They're not there to shed whether or not this is right or wrong. What they're there is to do is to fight. Now, some people are going to be like, well, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, because that's what I'm tuning in to watch. But here, guys, we need competitive fights. Burns and Figueroa was a competitive fight. The problem was, though, you had a referee, Cole, who shouldn't be reffing anymore. He's one of the biggest, if not the most known crook in Texas. Okay? We've had problems with this guy in the past. When are we going to learn from this? You think Al Haymon didn't know about this at all? Absolutely. Because he wants to make sure that his guys continue winning. Ricky Burns, to me, won that fight. It was a very close fight. It was a very good fight. Omar Figueroa is a tough kid. But you can almost kind of sense, and tell me if I'm wrong here, Brian Fogg, you can almost sense that he's on pilot control. He really doesn't know what he's going to throw, and he really doesn't set anything up. He just lets his hands go in the hopes that it's going to land on the plane. Am I wrong?
No, not at all, actually. And one thing I wanted to point out in the Cole comment you made, one thing that Cole does in his full-time job is he sells insurance to boxers. I mean, if that's not a conflict of interest, I don't know what is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, that's just – Lenny, go ahead, jump on in, man. Let me gather my thoughts over here before I spill my beer.
This is this card is an interesting card, too, because it actually had two guys that I don't know are with Haymon, or if they're with Haymon or not. I know Ricky Burns isn't with Haymon, and I think the guy his name is McDonald, I don't think he's signed with Haymon. These two fights were probably two of the most competitive fights that we've seen on a PBC card. It's just it blows my mind that we're being sold this, like these guys are great matchups. And you called this early in the PBC when everybody was making a big deal about Peterson and Danny Garcia matchup. Everybody was like, oh, this is going to be so amazing. And it's like these are nice fights, but these are middle of the road fights in a good year. And this is as good as it gets. I mean, and today, I mean, the fights today were good. They were good. Both of them were good fights. But they're good. Were they good fights because you had a guy with Haymon fighting a guy that wasn't with Haymon, or were they good fights for other reasons? I mean, it's there's too much control in the hands of one person or one entity. It just makes me, as a fan and as somebody who's a little bit more savvy, like on the business side of things, concerned about it.
especially when a guy's coming off of a losing streak, which is Ricky Byrne has kind of been there, you know. He stepped up to big fights. He's kind of been gifted, too. So there's a bit of a backlash on that in terms of, like, when he fought, like, Beltran, you know, he shouldn't have won that fight. But that's just what I'm saying is that people are so quick to jump up and down and get those pawns right away that they're not looking at the way the chessboard and the pawns are being moved, you know. And guess what? That we're the opponent that Heyman's after. We're fighting him. And that's what casual boxing fans and these cheerleading media guys are not really understanding is that they're checking us. That's pretty sad. Anyways, let me patch in some more fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with area code 787. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Listen, guys. This is Manny Pacquiao. My shoulder really hurt. I don't. here with that
well,
shit,
Mr.
Manny.
We have Mr. Carlson here on Leaving the Ring.
Manny. Manny right now, man. I can't. He sounds like Victor Cheney when Victor Cheney got dropped by Nonito. But,
no, that was much worse. Remember, Vic was like, what? What knockdown? Who knocked down who?
Yeah, I wasn't hurt. I don't know why they stopped the fight. I wasn't hurt. I won rematch.
I always keep condom with you girls. I check this out really quick. This is a funny story here, guys. So I work at the dealerships, and I'm not going to say the guy's name. But he's from the same country that Victor Chinin. And I asked him, just, you know, conversating. I said, hey, man, so you got any kids? He goes, oh, no. I always use the condom with the girls. And I'm like, what about the guys, man? Anyways, where's the subject here, Lenny? Let's keep on track here. Yeah, so what'd you think about that? What'd you think about that, Rob Litter? Results were pretty much what you thought they were going to be between Manny and Floyd or what?
Yeah, you know, a few years ago, I probably would have picked maybe would have picked Manny, but now, you know, it's kind of like Larry Merchant, like, you know, Larry Merchant basically, was it Larry Merchant? I don't know, one of those old white guys. He was getting interviewed, and he said, you know, if Floyd picked the fight now, then I'm going to pick him one, you know, 10 times out of 10, because he picked the fight for a reason. There's no risk, there's little risk. And he's, you know, he's in control of everything. So I figured that Mayweather was in a better position now, and it went how I thought it was going to go. I'm just hoping to see the younger dudes like Kell Brook
right.
and them get shine, and maybe we can get past this terrible. It's not even because for me as a real fight fan, as much as boxing gets on my nerves sometimes, this hasn't been a Mayweather era for me. You know, this has been an era of like a lot of good fighters, a lot of entertaining fighters, but it's going to be
this has
called
been an
the
era
Mayweather
of
era.
A lot of good. Hey, Rob, let's be honest. This has been an era right now for the past 5 years, maybe even 6 years, starting with the trend of Pacquiao and Floyd, of a lot of fighters avoiding good fights. There's been a lot more negotiating about who gets more money than rather getting good fights to find out who's the better guy in the ring. That's what we've been
that's
seeing a lot
that's
more
Floyd's fault,
trend.
Though. I personally blame
right.
Floyd for that. And that was my biggest
Roy
issue
Jones.
With Floyd.
I blame Roy Jones, you know what I mean? Actually, I blame Mickey from Rocky when Mickey was holding Rocky back from fighting Mr. T, if you remember that. That's who I blame. But
when Rocky found out he was fighting bums.
Right.
But, as for tonight, you know, I'm just hoping for chaos right now. I'm hoping Kirkland wins. I'm tired of all these prima donna bitches. I don't want Cotto to win. I'm tired of Cotto. I'm tired of Canelo. I'm tired of Floyd. I can't have this anymore. These guys are just ruining the sport. So what weight class is Canelo fighting at? Canelo weight? What is this weight class tonight? I don't even know what this is. I heard that it was at 150 pounds or something.
I thought
what
it was like
that?
154.5 or something. I don't even know.
That's ridiculous.
It's just how out of touch we are, man. But, hey, Rob, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother, all right? Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, man.
Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in, certainly can. 347-215-7598. I liked a little bit. I had a chance to watch a little bit of the 24-7 between Kirtland and Canelo. And, man, Ann Wolf, you can see she's got some money now. She got a little bit of makeup going on, a different hairstyle and stuff, but she did stress a little bit how she's not working with Kirtland. And I'm going to get down to it here, man. I'm going to ask you guys pick. Lenny, really quick, you're going to be doing the scorecard for this fight. What do you see happening between these two warriors here in this fight? Who do you think has the edge of winning?
Well, I think Canelo's a better boxer. Canelo, he's a fine boxer. His footwork has needed work for the last 5 years, but he's a solid boxer. He's got a ton of skills. He can take a punch. He does get hit a lot. Kirkland's wild, man. He's got a ton of power, but he can come into a fight and just stink it up here and there. It could go either way. I have Canelo winning and putting him down in the later rounds. I think he's probably going to come in better conditioned. Kirkland without Ann Wolf. I know I feel bad for the guy because he hates talking about Ann Wolf, but he's just been a different fighter without her. I don't see him coming in with the same kind of focus.
Let me just ask you this really quick. Do you think that, you know, watching that 24/7, you saw how upset he got. He said, man, you're kind of pissing me off asking me all these Ann Wolf questions. And in a lot of ways, do you think that he kind of resents that because the attention was, even when he was fighting, was more Ann Wolf, what Ann Wolf was doing, how Ann Wolf prepared him, how Ann Wolf had him in fighting shape. You think that's got to, in some way, get underneath the skin of him, and this is the retaliation of not calling up Ann Wolf and saying, hey, you should be in my corner. I think there's some way of him as almost like a sub figure to her, is he retaliating, fighting her back, like saying, I want to show you I can do this without you. What do you think, Lenny?
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I can see that being the case, and if it is, he picked the worst time to do it. This is the biggest stage of his career, the biggest fight of his career, the biggest payday of his career. And I mean, I would rather him come in at his best and see the best fight we can see. But for whatever reasons he has, he made that call. It sounded like he made that call late because it was really unclear who he was going to come in with until just before the fight got announced.
Brian, you know, Canelo has been for some time now with HBO as a power puncher. Is it fair to say that this guy really doesn't have much power and he's got to more or less rely on what boxing skills that he's able to obtain through his career? Is that fair to say about him? We need to stop calling him a power puncher because he hasn't really knocked anybody out at the heavier weight.
I absolutely agree with that, Dave. Even at welterweight, most of his knockouts were against subpar competition. But at the same time, I think tonight there's a pretty good chance he can get a stoppage just on what we've seen from Kirkland without Ann. I hate to keep bringing up Ann Wolf. I know everyone's doing it, but I think just from what we've seen from Kirkland without Ann Wolf, this might be the time for Canelo to actually make himself look like a power puncher at this weight, whatever weight that is.
You know, the one thing that kind of stands out and concerns me with James Kirtland here, and I don't know if anybody's pointed this out here, is that front foot of James Kirtland reminds me a lot of Krista Nymer Oriello, the heavyweight, which is he drags that front foot. He doesn't pick it up to place it so he can pivot, not traditionally like a fighter. With Chris Oriola, Chris would kind of plant his foot, and it's almost stuck in the mud where his knee locks. And it keeps him in a position where when he throws a punch, it's almost like he's reaching, and it allows a guy to counterpunch him. Ishida was able to counterpunch James Kirtland because of that front foot. But with Ann Wolf understood what he brought that wasn't, you know, that was actually an evident thing you could take advantage. But she found ways of making it not that evident in the ring. I'm concerned about being that Canelo may not be the most fast-footed fighter in there, but definitely can outbox him and counter him if that front foot drags its way into leading into trying to get in the pocket with Canelo. That's my concern, you know. Brian, I didn't hear your pick, but what do you think about that concern I got there right now? Is it relevant? Is it not?
It is relevant. And, you know, when Kirkland was with Ann Wolf, his footwork really still wasn't that great.
Right.
But he was so aggressive he was so aggressive that it didn't matter. I mean, he bull rushes so quickly that guys wouldn't know what to do anyways. They couldn't pick off his shots because he'd be into you by the time you even knew what he was doing. So without her, I think Canelo takes him out in 9 or 10 rounds, one-sided rounds. And And I don't think Kirkland is effective at all on offense.
Who do you think is the bigger puncher that right now, obviously, James is going to be walking. He already walked into the ring. You got Canelo walking in right now. But let me ask you, Lenny, who's the bigger puncher right now that you would have to point out? Canelo or Angulo? Because Angulo was able to hurt Kirkland, but he was able to take, he was able to absorb punishment from a very slow-handed, heavy-hand fighter like Angulo, where Canelo is a lot quicker, but is he strong enough to do what a lot of folks thought that Angulo was going to do, which was stop Kirkland?
I mean, they're very different type of punchers. I think Canelo's got consistent power. He's definitely not light-handed, but I think Angulo's probably more of a one-punch knockout type of power puncher. Canelo does throw a lot of body shots, and he'll break somebody down with big body shots, and he's got nice leverage when he throws those. I don't think I've seen him just cold cock somebody with a nice right hook and take him down like at any of the higher weights at least. I would give the edge, the overall one-punch power edge to Angulo, but I think Canelo's, what he's going to do is what he usually does, is just break him down with a lot of body shots and then ripen up Kirkland for the late rounds. And then do some damage there. Unless Kirkland can get him clean early, which would be fun for everybody. I mean, I'm a Canelo fan, admittedly, but I just want to see a good fight.
I'm with you on that one. I want to see a good fight. I think the one thing that Canelo does that Kirkland can and should take advantage of if it presents itself is Canelo does tend to walk himself back to the ropes to try to suck you in so he can counter. That's where Kirkland wants to jump on top of him, kind of keep him there and make sure that he doesn't slip out of his hands. Those are the moments that are going to count because those are the moments he has greater chance of hurting Canelo, which we haven't seen Canelo really get hurt since Jose Cotto was able to rock him. And that was back in when, Brian? 2011, I think, when Cotto...
Yeah, it was something like that. And, I wouldn't expect much of it tonight.
I wouldn't either. You know, who's the more precise puncher? I would give it to Canelo. Who's more of a thunder? I have to give it to Kirkland. This so overall, man, when you look at both of these guys on paper, this is really should be an all-out war. But I'm not expecting to see that from Canelo, Lenny. I don't see that happening. I don't see him trying to go toe-to-toe. I think this is the worst time for him right now because the Mayweather fight is really starting to be in a race because of the opponents he's getting himself with in the ring. It's starting to disappear that why test your chin right now with a big puncher like Kirkland?
You know, Dave, that's only assuming that he actually thinks Kirkland can hit him. For all intents and purposes, Canelo's pretty crafty in there, the counter puncher. I'm guessing his idea is, who knows if this will actually happen, but he's probably thinking that Kirkland's going to come nowhere near him and he's going to be able to Mayweather him, for lack of a better term. I mean, Canelo's
right.
A pretty decent counter puncher.
Absolutely. Well, the fight's about to start here. Again, guys, if you're just tuning in, you can call in 347-215-7598. You can auto-boom us. You can follow us on Twitter. You can get us on Facebook. You can email us at leavingaring@gmail.com. I mean, it's going to be myself here and Lenny the Fight Smith. You can follow Lenny the Fight Smith on Twitter, and you can follow Brian Foggs on Foggs Skies on Twitter as well. But me and Lenny will be calling out the fight, and Brian's going to be doing the scorecard for this fight between Canelo Alvarez and James Kirkland. They're definitely about to go at it right now. So let's hope, man. Let's just hope we got a good fight. Regardless of what happened with the PBC, there were good fights. They were very competitive, but it had to end that afternoon with some controversy.
The funny thing about the PBC card versus this card, look at the crowd. I'm looking out there, and this is at a stadium, and it looks pretty packed. I mean, at least the lower levels are pretty full. It's hard to see the higher levels. But at the earlier fight, which was also in San Antonio, from what I'm hearing on Twitter, was the lower areas were like forcibly packed, like they brought people down, and the upper areas of the arena were completely empty. You just couldn't see them on the TV broadcast. It's just crazy the difference in the way these promotions are done. And then we got the fight starting.
I don't know what the hell that is in the background. All right, man, they already started. I agree with you. I was like, it was something like, my man. Anyways, here we go. You got James Curling coming full speed ahead. And, again, you've got that front foot just dragging. Really wide stance from here right now. And I think what it is with Canelo's really what he's got to do is weather these first two, three rounds because Curling does come out like a world win.
He's giving him a lot of different looks, too. He's throwing he threw like a big overhand right to start that almost landed. He's landing the body okay. Oof.
And Canelo right now is taking some pretty big, heavy shots from Curling. It almost looks like Curling's having his way and overwhelming Canelo. But you can see that Canelo's trying to look for his moments and his shots to pick. Tying him up is by far one of the smartest things to do. Curtin's doing something that is a veteran move, is put that forehead in the chin of Canelo so Canelo can let him go and he can probably sneak in a shot. It looks like Canelo caught him with a left hook, almost for a moment shook James Curtin. And Canelo's doing something that he's pretty good at, and it's throwing that uppercut.
Oh, there it is again.
Oh, beautiful shot from Canelo. Right now, you got Curling waving him in. To me, almost looked like, Lenny, that he wanted to take a second to catch his bearings because he got rocked there for a moment.
Yeah. My goodness. Canelo got him clean.
Goes James Curling down in the first round. A minute and 16. James. He's down right now. But remember, guys, James does become dangerous when he gets rocked. But right now, you can see it in his face. He is really, really hurt. There goes that
I might have spoken,
of him.
I might have spoken too soon earlier when I said Canelo didn't really have that one punch to the chin power. He showed it right now. I mean, Kirkland's not the doesn't have the best beard on him, but he landed it clean and whew.
Well, I did say he's very precise with his punches. And being precise with a guy that's had a history of being rocked early and had a history of being chinny, this is a dangerous guy to face up against. He's got now, remember what I said, he had to weather the storm. Canelo had to weather the storm of Curling. Now the tables have completely turned. And that's the one thing that we love about boxing is one moment can be going a certain way. And just like that, in the snap of fingers, it can completely change. Right now, it's Curling that's using those ropes as the extra third leg. And he's being rocked.
Canelo is landing at he is landing at will right now.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
So James Curling gets out of that first round. Thank God for that bell. You know now, this is second gear, not for Curling, for Team Curling to step up and start giving some advice. I did mention that wide stance and that front foot could pose a problem. Why? Because he can't get away from punches. He's stuck in the mud. Canelo saw it. They took advantage of it. This is where Curling has to start using the jab. Forget about having the Mike Tyson. He's got to use the jab. Got to fall back on some boxing, Lenny. What do you think?
Yeah, he's got to move his head too. He's not moving his head at all. I mean, Canelo doesn't move his head either, but Kirkland's going in there, and when he's throwing as many punches as he is, and his head is in the same exact spot the entire time, he's a target. When his hands are down, Canelo just—I mean, he's not moving his head. He's moving his upper body a little bit, but he's there. He's there for the punching. I mean, when he's that open, it doesn't matter how aggressive he is. If Canelo can just wait for his shots, he's going to be there all night.
There it goes again, starting off. Now, you know, Curtin's using that jab just a bit. He started it off, and it looked well. He's trying to lead with that left hook. But again, man, he's trying to just open up. He's setting nothing up, and Canelo is the quicker, more precise fighter, and he's landing first. And Curtin right now is just taking a beating. This is right now, Lenny's when the corner has to really start looking at their fighter and having some concern and possibly stepping in and saving this guy for another day. Because right now, he's just taking way too much punishment, and it doesn't look like that Tyson physique that he's carried throughout his beginning of his career is going to come anywhere near any time in the minute of this round.
Yeah, he's starting to turn it around a little bit and push Canelo around, but he's not landing anything clean. He's throwing big punches, but I mean, that's going to affect him if this fight goes past five or six rounds. All those big punches that Kirkland's throwing now are going to – he'll lose his – he'll have no legs by the sixth round.
Right now you can see Kirkland's trying to get something going. He's putting his weight on him, which is pretty good. But at the same time, he's really leaving himself open for a check hook or an uppercut by Canelo. Canelo, honestly, in my opinion, should start to kind of a bit slow down. Use his legs a little bit more because you know that Kirkland has problems trying to close distance. Kirkland needs you to be in front of him, just like right there. Remember I mentioned that when Canelo is on those ropes, this is the time for Kirkland to take advantage. And he's trying to do so, but his legs, Lenny, just look really out of it. He doesn't look like he's got himself underneath.
Yeah, I'm surprised Canelo's not throwing that uppercut. It looks like it's there for him when he's back up up against the ropes, and he hasn't really he threw it right now, but it's been there. It's been available. He just hasn't been throwing it, but it looks like he's kind of trying to conserve his energy.
Let's pull in Brian Fogg really quick and let's see what Brian's got to say about what we're seeing here in the second round. There's 45 seconds left in this round. Brian, what do you got, man? What do you got for us?
Well, so far it's been a pretty easy fight to score. First round's a 10-8 for Canelo. This one's probably 10-9. But I don't see James Kirkland came out strong. But, and as he's done a lot, he gets caught. He's going to get caught. And just that's the nature of his style. And, you know, he's not taking the shots quite like he would if he were in Anwolf shape. And he's getting beat up. Well, he's fighting back a little bit, but.
Let me ask you this. If that first round would have happened with Anwolf, and Kirkland right now is just taking some hellacious body shots, and I think that's what's really opened up for the headshots for Canelo, is those body shots, because that's what set up the straight right hand. But going back to my original thought here was, even if he was with Anwolf and he was dropped in that first round, what would have been said that was would have been different in terms of him going back to that corner there, Lenny? What do you think Anwolf would have told Kirkland?
Maybe try to box a little bit more. I know Kirkland's not a pure boxer, but Canelo's expecting him to come out there and go straight towards him, and just for Canelo to be able to just counter for at least part of the round, conserve some energy, let Kirkland punch himself out for the round, and then open himself up. If Kirkland comes out and does the opposite, I don't know if that's going to help, but I feel like that could be something, just coming out there, jabbing a little bit more instead of throwing those nothing but power punches that aren't connecting.
Right now, you got to start wondering how much more and if the ref is going to be merciful and jumping in and stopping this fight. If Kirkland's not able to land something big and significant to show he's being competitive in this fight, because right now, after two rounds, I think it's fair to say Canelo has complete control of this fight and really doesn't have anything to worry about in return when he throws a punch, Lenny.
Yeah, I think Canelo's been good on the ropes. He's willingly going on the ropes like he usually does. He's doing it again. He's kind of sitting there letting Kirkland punch himself out in the round. He's not really landing a lot. He landed one right there on his ear. And if we wait in the middle of the round, Canelo's going to start pushing, going to start moving forward, going to start pushing Kirkland back a little bit. It's kind of this looks like the last round almost exactly.
And there goes again that front foot of Kirkland. Like I said, it's kind of weird. He drags it. He ends up getting stuck in the mud, and he ends up reaching. So he telegraphs some of his big punches here. Canelo right now may be taking a rest in this round and just picking his shots, which is a really smart thing to do, is not throw out your load. It's just be conservative. You can be conservative with Kirkland because even though Kirkland is a big puncher and can be a whirlwind, he does tend to pity-pat some of his shots so that he can sneak in some bigger shots. He's trying to do that, which we've seen him do in the past. He did that with Tapia, and he just right now eats up a nice, big, strong left hook from Canelo. But if you had to watch this fight, if you're just tuning in and you didn't know anything about these two guys, right now you would be sitting here going, Canelo is the bigger puncher. He's the more fearful guy that most people didn't want to step in the ring with right now.
Canelo with the uppercut.
Yep, there it goes again. And right now is the time for his corner to start thinking about this young man's future, because he's taking a beating, and it doesn't look like he's going to get away from the big shots for Canelo Alvarez.
50 seconds is a long time.
Oh, no, Canelo sees that.
That's it.
He's looking for it. There it is.
That's it.
It's over. It is over. James
Turnin
has
Canelo's showing some power.
Power against a chinny James Kirtland. Kirtland is on his back. He has stopped by the Cinnamon Kid. It just makes you wonder if 2 years, 3 years ago, if this fight would have happened, could it have been any different? Canelo's walking and showing, man, big heart. I think right now he's really showing some humbleness here by going over to Kirtland, checking on him to see if he's all right, Lenny.
Yeah, I mean, that's wow. I mean, that was a huge knockout, and that was big for Canelo. I mean, recognizing the danger. I mean, these guys step into the ring and take put their lives on the line every single time, and he's acknowledging right there the danger of boxing. But I mean, that was a devastating punch. That was a devastating knockout, and that was a good character shown by Canelo right there, hovering over, making sure Kirkland was doing all right.
Well, I'll tell you what, good sportsmanship from Canelo by checking on James Kirtland, but good character coming from that uppercut that landed on James Kirtland's chin.
Wow.
You know, Kirtland just had nothing there, man. You know, the only thing that I saw from James Kirtland was him trying to get in major flurries, which he thought could help him get through the rounds and land something big where he could turn the tables around. Brian Fogg, man, let me hear your thoughts, brother.
Yeah, I mean, it just wasn't in Kirkland tonight. And, you know, kind of like I predicted earlier, I didn't see it going this early, but Kirkland is the kind of guy that would make Canelo look like a power puncher. He would make Canelo look like a highlight reel fighter.
Right.
I'm guessing even Golden Boy didn't think it would go this early, but, you know, the shame with Kirkland, and I know this maybe the fourth time I'm saying this, there's just such a what-if over his head. Whenever he loses or looks terrible, it's what-if. What if he would have trained properly? What if he had the right team in there? And I don't think it would have mattered. I think tonight there's no team out there in the world that can make him competitive with Canelo, but there always is going to be that what-if.
You know, here's the thing. Is if they wanted to sell the fight, if Cotto gets past his next opponent, this is definitely the way to sell it. When you hear the casual fans go, this is what's wrong with boxing because of what happened with Pacquiao and Mayweather, and they said this is the last big fight for boxing, they are so wrong. Right now, Canelo and Golden Boy have just stamped and sold another fight to the casual fans out there that know better. Because if Cotto looks semi-good, not great, but semi-good in his next fight, this high reel right now that you just mentioned, Brian, is what's going to sell the next pay-per-view numbers and make it a mega showdown between the Puerto Rican star Miguel Cotto and the Mexican star Saúl Canelo Alvarez.
You know, this is the perfect fight to put on Mexican Independence Day weekend would be a little soon for Canelo, but this fight maybe next Cinco de Mayo weekend. I mean, it's perfect on selling the fight, and you know, who knows if the fight will be any good. I don't know. Canelo and Cotto, I guess neither of the two guys can play a whole lot of defense, so I guess it works for me, but there are going to be other super fights, and I'm guessing in the next 2 or 3 years quite a few of them will have to do with Canelo.
Absolutely, man. And you got to feel for 50 Cent as well because, you know, he was stuck with the bill of having James Kirtland here. I think it's fair
divorce.
To say. Yeah, exactly. I think it's fair to say, Lenny, that he doesn't have his luck in boxing. He may have his luck in rapping, but boxing is not something that he's had his luck in.
Yeah, I think 50 Cent made all his money with one deal with Powerade or one of those, or Coca-Cola or something. He made all his money there. So he can afford losing a little bit here and there with his boxing and other petted ventures. But, yeah, boxing is definitely not 50 Cent's thing. James Kirkland was his one guy, yeah, that's not. It doesn't look like that's going to work out. Canelo showed today, though. He was always a solid power puncher, counter puncher. Today he took it. I think took it to the next level. He looked great countering Kirkland's shots and Kirkland's misses, moving his head and then coming in. I mean, that knockout punch was when Kirkland was missing a big punch, kind of moving his head and coming back in there with a big right of his own. That's something that we really hadn't seen from him, even against Angulo, who's a come-forward, no-defense type of fighter. He was able to counter him, but not with this much power. I mean, he looked pretty good. I thought I was worried that he was going to come in a little bit sunken in and dehydrated because he looked really I think Gabe tweeted that he looked a little ashy at the weigh-in. And Canelo tends to cut weight in a rough manner. He always looks really, really dehydrated and sunken in. But he looked good. He looked healthy on fight night. He actually looked like the smaller fighter in the ring.
I don't know. I got to take my hat off to him. He looked good. He looked exactly like what Canelo does has always looked, in my opinion. But I have to put in there that the chin of Kirkland had a lot to play with this as well, you know, and the play of not having Ann Wolf there not helping him out. I'm not sure if it would have made a big difference this time around because timing is everything. And it wasn't Canelo's fault the first time when they wanted to sign to do this fight. Got to put the blame back in James Kirkland. You remember, even Ann Wolf said it. He is known for making bad decisions, and this was one of them, by putting the fight off 2 years later or a year later and stuff. Let's put some fight fans on, 347-215-7598. Let's go with area code 312. You're on live right now. Leave the ring. What's on your mind, brother? 312, you out there?
I think that was James Kirkland on the line.
It's probably, yeah. It's James Kirkland still on the canvas looking up. He's like, damn, I can't believe this. I cannot believe this. You know, it's going to be tough to swallow here for my partner, Gabriel Montoya, who's been covering James for a very long time. But he did tell me a while back, man. He was like, listen, I don't think he can win this fight without Ann Wolf. You know, I don't care who else has worked with them, conditioning coach-wise, et cetera, trainer. It's just not going to happen. I know some people that suddenly got very close to James Kirkland were very adamant saying that, no, he's great, trust me, you got to da-da-da-da. And, well, this is what we kind of knew. Sometimes in boxing, we can look like geniuses when we come to our picks. Sometimes. Isn't that right, Brian? Sometimes in boxing, we can do that.
Yeah, you know, we all make poor decisions. Heck, last week I picked Pacquiao to win. Yeah, I know, right? But, you know, you're laughing, I know, but it's not that crazy for someone before this fight say, hey, I think Kirkland would have won, just because I believe we're going to see a different James Kirkland and a different Canelo. I mean, he looks sharp.
Right,
but,
right. I think a lot of us had the thought of, and I think Lenny, you too, we had the thought that it was going to drag out to at least 8 or 9 if there was going to be a stoppage. I did not believe it would be. I thought, if anything, it would have dragged out to the final rounds, the championship rounds. But being precise with his punches and that uppercut, finding a home early with that uppercut and seeing it, that it can land when he wanted to, Canelo was on point.
Dave, I absolutely agree with you, man. Everything we can say about Kirkland and the what ifs, I hope it doesn't take away from the fact that Canelo looked sharp tonight.
Absolutely.
He did everything he needed to do, and he looked like he was the guy that was prepared. And for the most part, all other deficiencies aside with Canelo, he's always prepared, with the exception of Mayweather, but I don't know how much more he could have prepared for that fight. The guy is, oh, God.
I'm just looking at that replay, man. And look at his body, the way he just slumped. I mean, even Ishida back in Japan is going like, damn, that was a knockout. Now, that's the way you knock out a guy. Palo.
Wow. You know, so look, I mean, it looks like everybody's pretty much on board with Canelo Cotto as the next big fight. I mean, looking ahead to that as the next big thing, I'm worried that it's going to be another snoozer, though, because Canelo looks great when he has guys coming forward at him, throwing a lot of punches that are not necessarily the smartest guys. When he fought a smart boxer, Lara, it was a snooze fest, and Canelo arguably lost. Cotto's a smart fighter. I mean, he's not the best defensive fighter. He's not the most powerful fighter at middleweight, but he's smart. He's a smart fighter. He gave Mayweather probably one of the best fights that Mayweather's had in his career, boxing. And if he comes out there and tries to box Canelo and Canelo tries to box back, everybody loses. I mean, it's not going to be – I mean, it'll be a nice tactical fight, but no, I don't see any knockouts in that fight.
I don't either. Yeah, I agree with you, Lane. I think that it's going to be who takes lead, who takes charge, and whoever tries to take charge is going to be the loser in that end because they're going to be countered. And you made a great point there with Miguel Cotto giving Floyd Mayweather a better fight, because when I watched that fight, I was like, Oscar De La Hoya and Miguel Cotto gave a much better effort and fight to Floyd Mayweather than Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah, I mean, I think Maidana even in the first fight gave him a better fight than Manny Pacquiao did. For different reasons, though. I think Maidana and Castillo gave Mayweather good fights because they were really, really aggressive and gave him different looks. I think Oscar and Cotto gave him better or good fights because boxed with them and they had a skill set that was comparable, but they were still aggressive. And Mayweather obviously has trouble with people that are really aggressive that have some strength behind those punches. When Manny Pacquiao fought Mayweather, didn't have any of it. He wasn't nearly as good a boxer. He wasn't in the same class as Mayweather as far as pure boxing skills go. And he did not show up with any power, whether that was the injury to his right shoulder or just the size differential. I mean, I was blown away at how much bigger Mayweather looked in the ring on fight night compared to Manny Pacquiao. He was, I mean, not just taller, but just bigger in every way and pushing him around any chance he got.
Absolutely. You know, and right now, I think it's fair. I think it's the logical choice would be Amir Khan. Finally, give him the kid. The kid's been asking for it. Let that happen and allow Floyd Mayweather to go into retirement, which is not going to hold for very long. It's going to it's going to take a little bit for him to come back out. Why? Because he's just that egotistic that he's going to want to come back. Just watching going through right now, looking at the HBO schedule, I got to tell you, the one fight that's got me going, ooh, that's going to be an interesting, good fight, is watching Timothy Bradley, seeing that Timothy Bradley's going to be going in with Jesse Vargas. That is an interesting fight, guys. I don't know what your guys' thoughts are about that fight there, but I'd like to see what happens between Bradley and Jesse Vargas.
I actually don't think much about that fight because I think Bradley actually wins that easily. I don't, you know, for whatever I think Jesse Vargas is, I don't see him as that same level as Tim Bradley. He's a good fighter, a fringe HBO fighter, and he can beat most guys. But there's even a few times in his career
Whoa, Brian, you mean to tell me that Roy Jones is not the greatest trainer of all times and he doesn't do that for the rest of the guys that he's training?
I'm plead the fifth on that one.
Well, I'll say it. No, he's not a very great trainer. He's not a very good trainer and stuff, man. Okay, let's be honest. But hey, saying that though, I gotta give Jesse Vargas some props. He does go out there. He does try to fight. He's gonna be tough to take out of there for Timothy Bradley. Bradley's not a very big puncher. He's a volume puncher. He's a smaller Holyfield, which is a guy that's a big punch, but he has a big heart, and he brings punches in every angle. That's going to spell for with Jesse Vargas, who takes punches fairly well, Lenny, in my opinion, is going to spell for a pretty good entertaining fight on HBO.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Brian that Timothy Bradley is going to come in as the more skilled fighter. He should win that fight. My worry is that Jesse Vargas looks like he's been tabbed as possibly one of the next big things for Top Rank and HBO. So if it goes to a decision, I can see Timothy Bradley again getting screwed. And he's not a knockout guy, like you said. So it's going to be a fight that's going to probably go 12 rounds. It could be fun, especially if the way if Tim Godley fights the way he's been fighting and into some battles. And Jesse Vargas, I like Jesse Vargas. He's fun to watch. He's got a nice chin. I agree with Brian, though. He's not – I don't consider him an elite prospect. I think he's going to come in there and do his best. I think Tim Bradley should win the fight, though. I mean, I'm glad it's a good fight. It's better. HBO's upcoming schedule is definitely a lot better than Showtime's upcoming boxing schedule,
yeah,
which is non-existent right now. I'm canceling my Showtime subscription, by the way.
Right. Steven Espinoza was the sports director out there. He's still scratching his head going like, any minute there should be an email from Al Heyman. Speaking about Al Heyman here, we hear about the lawsuit with Golden Boy. Both of my guys here are on top of it, covering it. I want to hear really first, Lenny, you've been looking into this lawsuit here. Give me your first take about it. What have you found out? What is interesting and what is something out there we don't know about just yet?
So I'm working on a piece for the website right now. It's a little bit more in depth than I thought it was going to be. There's a lot of moving parts of this lawsuit. It's actually, there's a lot of stuff involved with the Golden Boy lawsuit filed against Al Heyman this week. That's kind of missing that's really probably been covered by other settlements that they've had in the past that haven't been directly between Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy and Al Heyman. The Richard Schaefer settlement from earlier this year or from late last year and the Mauricio Herrera lawsuit, the other side dealings to get Leo Santa Cruz back with Heyman and off of the Golden Boy banner all kind of come into play. There's a lot of moving parts here, but this lawsuit itself is essentially Golden Boy saying that Al Heyman's playing on both sides of the fence here. He's acting as a promoter. He's acting as a manager. And as we've been saying on the show, as Steve and you and Dave have been saying on the show and a few other people have been saying in the past, is in violation of the Ali Act. He's been blatantly violating the Ali Act. Just from my plain reading of the complaint, I think the biggest problems that Golden Boy is going to have and that Bernard Hopkins is going to have is I don't know if they really have a leg to stand on in this action as far as the Ali Act goes, because they're not signed with Al Heyman. They don't have a fighter on as a plaintiff that's signed with Al Heyman that's accusing him of committing a violation of the Ali Act. That
right.
could be a problem down the line.
Brian, any thoughts about that, bro? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lenny. Finish your thought. I thought you were done. My bad.
Well, I mean, they're suing him on an antitrust cause of action. So, I mean, that comes into play as well. But as far as the Ali Act stuff goes, antitrust.
Yeah.
That Al Heyman's controlling too many aspects of one industry. Just in layperson's terms, he's controlling too many aspects of one industry and not allowing proper competition to take place. It's a tough argument to make and it's a tough case to make, but they do have the blatant Ali Act violations kind of on their side. It's just the problem with the case is that as far as the Ali Act stuff goes, they don't have a fighter that can actually go after Heyman for violating the act.
Now, Brian Fogg, you covered the Ali Act. You went through that through the articles there that you went, you know, and then you actually made an article about it. You combed it pretty well. What do you think? The Ali Act being broke by Al Heyman? Or, I mean, do they even, like Lenny's mentioning right now, how much of a case do you think they might have as well? Do you think there is a bigger case there? Or is there something else that we're overlooking that maybe Golden Boy's lawsuit is going after?
Well, I mean, obviously, Lenny's the lawyer, not myself. But, what, I mean, what everyone in boxing knows is, or should know by now is that there have been obvious Ali Act violations by Al Heyman. I'm not sure how it necessarily relates to this case, but what I do wonder about is if a judge will look at the market share that Al Heyman has bought up by buying television slots and buying 90% of the television slots out there for boxers and say that's anti-competitive behavior. And if a judge does,
is that breaking the law, though, guys? Guys, is that breaking the law, though? If you're just
ask the Rockefellers.
What was that?
Ask the Rockefellers.
Yeah, ask the Rockefellers. But Lenny,
Bell Telephone, or
is that breaking the law, Lenny? I mean, is that considered breaking the law?
It's, I mean, I'm not an antitrust attorney, but as far as it's a tough hill to climb if you're gonna claim that someone is controlling enough of the market to violate antitrust laws. It's tough. It's happened in the past, but there's also been instances in the recent past where it hasn't happened where it should have. When you have Comcast talking about buying Time Warner, and the federal government doesn't officially do anything, and then I mean, I guess that deal fell apart for other reasons. But I mean, it's a different era than it was 30, 40 years ago when they broke up the Bells, the AT&T, when the AT&T essentially had a monopoly over all the telephone industry.
Right.
It's tough. It's going to be interesting. I mean, I think my go-to line when anytime there's any litigation involved with boxing that's interesting is the complaint is one thing. Where it's going to get really fun and where the potential for really good information is going to come out is in discovery when you start getting depositions taking place and that kind of stuff. When people are testifying under oath as to what's going on in certain organizations, Floyd Mayweather, Al Heyman, these types of guys don't like to go through discovery. Floyd Mayweather, I don't think in any of the civil cases he's been in, has gotten to that level of the case or to that point in the case. They usually settle earlier, like the Manny Pacquiao defamation case. So I don't
right.
know if we'll get to that point here or if Al Heyman's just going to pay out Golden Boy. He's been paying him out. In the piece that I'm working on, it sounds like from what everyone's reporting, from what Steve Kim was reporting, Heyman paid out Golden Boy for the Richard Schaefer arbitration.
Right.
Heyman paid out Golden Boy for the disputes with the different fighters that were on Golden Boy. I can easily see this coming down to Heyman just giving Golden Boy another check for $10, $15 million and the complaint going away. But
so,
if it doesn't,
and
if we get to discovery.
Because some folks are going to be listening to this, and they're going to be like, hey, man, this more or less sounds a trend of sour grapes from Golden Boy because they're not involved with the PBC contract. They're not involved with all of the other TV time slots. Is that a strong possibility, guys, that this is a case of well, we got shunned from the sandbox, so now we are going to the principal?
Yes and no. I mean, if they weren't shoved out of the sandbox, they wouldn't be saying anything. Sure, they had a great deal going there until about 8-9 months ago. But, and yeah, they were shoved out of the sandbox to say. But to be frank, it is a legitimate suit in my mind, at least on the Ali Act, and what they'll be able to actually pull out, I don't know, but yeah, I do think they have a legitimate claim, motives or not.
Right. Lenny, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I can see the especially a certain segment of the boxing public who, for some reason, supports Al Heyman for whatever he does, is going to turn around and say that, yeah, this is definitely sour grapes. Lou DiBella is already out there towing the company line, saying that this is sour grapes and this is
right.
Well, now that you're not on the gravy train, you're all pissed off and you're going to sue. But yeah, I mean it's a valid cause of action. The complaint on it didn't look ridiculous. Some of the references in the complaint are interesting though. They definitely cite to a lot of current news articles. Reading the complaint, it just jumped out at me. It looks like a giant press release, just asking for certain boxing reporters to retweet it and post about it and talk about it because they're referenced in a federal filing. But I mean, it's a valid complaint. If Golden Boy thinks that they're wrong, if Oscar thinks that he's been wrong, then I mean, I'm a litigator, so I'm never going to tell someone that has a valid cause of action or valid complaint that filing the complaint means that it's just sour grapes. I mean, it's. I hate to say we'll see, but we will see how it ends up. If it just kind of goes away and they settle it, then Golden Boy, I'm sure, got what they wanted. I mean, I think some of it that's going to go into play though is Golden Boy lost a lot of big money fighters outside of Canelo Alvarez. They don't have a lot of big ticket guys, and they lost a lot of investors in the last year.
Right.
So these payouts that they're getting from Heyman, I mean, I think they're needed in for they got to refill the coffers somewhere. So if they get another payout here and it helps them last for another year or 2 years, then maybe that's part of the plan. But it's hard to know. I tried to get in touch with the attorney that filed the complaint after the Chris Mannix article came out that they were filing the complaint. I wanted to take a look at it. I contacted Burt Fields' office, and they said that they weren't handling the case when I spoke to them. So they ended up filing the complaint about a week and a half later. So
right.
I guess something changed, and they ended up filing it. I mean, they didn't have to tell me anything. It's an attorney-client privilege thing, so wouldn't surprise me one way or the other. But he's got – they have a good attorney. Burt Fields is a hell of an attorney. He's worked with Oscar before, so it's going to be interesting.
It's definitely going to be interesting. You know, the rumors that I've heard for the past year and talking to certain people's key people's in about the whole fiasco, what's going on between those two separate companies, is that Golden Boy is absolutely losing a lot of money. I mean, they dished out a lot of money 2 years ago when they were in bed with Schaefer and Al Heyman. They were putting up a lot of their money up front for fighters that they didn't even have signed. So there is a bit of sour grapes. I don't blame them if they're pissed off. You know what I mean? It's like being used. The girl takes you, you know, you take a girl out a couple, maybe 10, 15 dates, and you're calling my girlfriend and my fiance, and you later find out, no, you were just there to pay for the dinner and the drinks. You're going to feel a little shaft here, and that's exactly how Golden Boy feels. So what I'm being told is that they're running out of money, and this is the only way they can keep their heads above water, Lenny. Is that far-fetched, or could that be closer to the truth than what we want to believe?
Yeah, I mean, it could be a lot closer to the truth than we want to believe. Boxing is expensive, and it's an expensive business to start, and it's an expensive business to continue. You got to pay out purses, you got to pay out promotional fees, you got to rent out venues, you got to front a lot of cash, and if it doesn't work out, then you lose a lot of cash. Heyman has the luxury of having what was originally $300 million. Now I think it's closer to $500 million to play with, and he can keep just losing money left and right, like it looks like he's been doing, because he's got a pretty big bank. But Golden Boy is an ongoing business, and if they're not bringing in a lot of money from these fights, it's going to be tough for them. And they've had a nice run recently. They had I'm still watching HBO. They're showing the highlights of Matisse and Provodnikov. That good fight tonight, I'm sure, was a big fight for them. I'm sure they made a decent amount on it. But, yeah, I mean, they lost half of what their stable has been to Heyman, to the PBC. And they're looking for ways to make money in the future, and it's going to be tough when they don't have a lot of superstar or superstar level guys. Interesting thing, though, I think a few people were tweeting earlier, Rock Nation had some people in the crowd tonight, which would be an interesting story to follow. Rock Nation's had some trouble getting fighters also, but they definitely have a lot of money behind them.
Absolutely. I don't find it far-fetched. If I was to hear tomorrow morning or Monday through some people that early next year, if Golden Boy looks to sell their brand to a money goer, I don't find that far-fetched. If Top Rank or Rock Nation were to step up and say, hey, we'll be the money to back you up, but we have this amount of percentage that it's owned by us, Lenny, could that possibly happen? If the lawsuit, or if Golden Boy can't just seem to find monies in the fight game like they used to at one point.
Yeah, I mean, I can see like a merger of sorts. If the PBC keeps going and can last the next 2 or 3 years, and they keep taking venues away from Golden Boy, the lawsuit aside, keep taking venues and fighters away from other promotional companies like Golden Boy and Top Rank and some of the smaller ones, or the up and coming ones like Rock Nation, I can see some sort of merger on the other side to try
and
compete.
Which would be a smart thing to do.
Should
be a smart thing, but egos really kick in boxing. I think that's the biggest problem in boxing, is that everybody wants to be in the top of that hill, and they don't want to. They don't want to share it. They don't feel that there's enough ground to have another king stamp their throne. That's a major problem with the sport of boxing. That's really going to have to come down to Golden Boy, Oscar De La Hoya, and his team to whether or not they want to keep thriving in this company. Because right now, if they cannot produce big fights, if they cannot sign other fighters, because they're losing fighters every week, if not maybe 2 to 3 fighters a month to Al Haymon right now, Lenny, right?
Yeah, I mean, if it's not guys that they have already, it's guys that they want, or these prospects that they would like to pick up. I mean, guys that I ran into at the gym have been approached by both sides. I mean, a kid that just got signed, hasn't fought yet, hasn't fought as a pro yet. He was weighing options between Golden Boy and Top Rank and Haymon. And I mean, he ended up going with Golden Boy. But you have guys like that left and right. I know another guy that's just about to turn pro, Haymon guy. So Haman's poaching guys, these younger guys. I mean, he signed the entire Olympic team from the last Olympics. He's taking away guys at the ground level, these prospects. So I mean, he's draining the pool for Golden Boy down the line. So at some point, they're going to run into some big problems getting new up and coming fighters on TV.
You know, the smaller fight promoters out there got smart and saw the daylight signing on with Al Haymon. It's just not fighters that went along the road with Al Haymon. It was small-time promoters like Warriors and DiBella. They saw the opportunities to sell their soul getting in bed with Al Haymon. Main events in Golden Boy and Top Rank are only the few, like Rock Nation, that have stayed away from that trend. Golden Boy woke up after their binge and said, hey, we're just being swallowed into small pieces. We're being X'd out. We're becoming extinct with Al Haymon. Al Haymon came in like the Spaniards here, Lenny. They just kind of just breaded him out. So there's got to be some type of form where these promoters got to get together and look at this, because right now, who's on the winning end is Al Haymon. Anyways, folks, thanks for tuning in to Leaving the Ring. I want to thank Lenny for taking the seat of Gabriel Montoya, Brian Falk for stepping in on the seat of Lenny as the scorekeeper here. It was a short night of boxing, but it was short and sweet. It was vicious. Canelo took the win over James Kirtland. James Kirtland, well, we may not ever see him back into the ring. Unfortunately, with his history, the guy doesn't know how to take a lot. I just don't see him coming back. I see him kind of falling deeper and deeper into the abyss of darkness because of this loss with Canelo Alvarez, Lenny.
Yeah, man. he doesn't fight often, so we're not going to be missing much. But
we're not.
But yeah,
we're not going to be.
Yeah.
Well, man,
all right, man. Thanks, Dave.
It was a good run. Okay, Lenny, thanks again. Everybody, don't drink and drive. Have a safe weekend with your family. Just don't drink and drive, because you will spill your beer.